Coming up on this edition of the Golf Digest podcast, we wrap up Q School and talk to the author of one of the best rounds of the year.
My God, my swing feels like an unfolding lawn chair.
Well, why do they even have water if you're not supposed to hit it there?
Because it's fun! We're having fun!
What is this, custom? Mine's off the rack.
I wish Tiger Woods was here to help me with this.
We'll do it live!
Welcome back to the Golf Digest podcast. I'm Alex Myers. Today I'm joined by Sam Wyman and Keely Levins. Guys, we got a lot of Q School to talk about. Of course, Q School used to be even more pressure-packed, I guess you could say, in a way, where PGA Tour spots were on the line up until just a few years ago. Sam, I guess I'll start with you because I know you've covered the event. Do you like that it's how it's changed, or what do you think?
You can make the case that this is actually more pressure filled now because guys are playing for status on the web.com tour, which is not bad. It's the difference between that and nothing. Whereas it used to be the difference between the PGA Tour, which is obviously the ideal, and the web.com. So it was like once you got to final stage of Q School back in the old days, you were assured something. Now, granted, the line between those two is still pretty significant, but you know, there's still some great stories, and especially you're talking about guys who are really on the fringes of their career at that point. So I used to love it. I thought it was a great thing, and every year there was a couple of, you know, it's a tidier story when you say a guy, you know, shoots the round of his life to get to the highest level of golf as opposed to now. But
now,
still.
Because now you have, certain guys are getting 8 starts. Certain guys are getting 12 starts. It's not – Only the winner gets full exemption next year on the web.com tour. So I don't know, Keely. I think that maybe there could be I don't think it should all go to the PGA Tour. I think that's not fair. I think it is a better test to let a guy earn
totally.
It throughout a whole season than just one tournament.
I was going to say, Keely is the best person to talk to because she did that big story and podcast this year about Ty Tryon, who's like the classic example.
Exactly.
Of I did it, yeah.
Q School not really being a great gauge of whether someone can succeed on the PGA Tour.
And when I finally got him on tape, it was at a qualifier for Web Q School, which is just, you know, to see just kind of like that full circle of maybe he is playing better than he was then.
Right.
And can't make it.
Right.
But I don't think that like the general public has enough appreciation for the fact that there is only like one card. Just, you know, they aren't handing out 20 cards to the web. Like you can play amazingly and only get 8 starts. Like that's barely anything, really.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's too much of a drop off. They could still have one spot even to the PGA Tour or a few spots to the PGA, and then 5 spots, you get full exemption.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that there's only one full exemption and, 40 spots get 8 starts. Top 10 get 12 and then the next 30 get 8, which doesn't mean you only get 8. It means you have 8 starts to, make enough to then
– sure.
You can easily up your status.
They're trying to protect the value of the web.com season, right? So that the full season has value, and you're putting emphasis on that as opposed to 6 rounds.
Right, and now they're mixing in the PGA Tour guys,
right?
Who didn't the 125 through 200 now on the PGA Tour, they go to this web finals, and they're automatically guaranteed some sort of web status for the next year. They play the finals, the 4 events. They can improve their status. But you're right. They're rewarding those people, which it makes sense. Those guys are established, more established guys. You've proven yourself.
Yeah.
But it just makes it even tougher to break in. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned that I covered like a ridiculous 5 or 6 straight years because
that's unbelievable.
I know it's a really inefficient way to run your business. But back in my newspaper days, it was this amazingly romantic idea that literally. A guy from your area could literally play 6 rounds and advance
to
the PGA Tour where you're literally playing that week with Tiger Woods and whomever.
Right.
And so that prospect and that Sunday where literally these guys were emerging from the scoring trailer and they were literally handing out cards or information about it's such an amazing idea, which, it's unfortunately lost. The great irony, of course, is that I covered it for – like I think 5 straight years. And every year I went, and I would cover Johnson Wagner, who was like the main guy I was going for, who was from the Westchester area and was, you know, obviously an aspiring tour pro at the time. And every year I went, and he never got his card. You know, he just never even came close. Then the last year, like, we're not going, it's not worth it. And then he was in contention. So I literally was, you know, it used to end on Monday. Right. So literally on Sunday, we're looking at his scores, like, God, he's inside the number. They're like, get on a plane, go down to Orlando. So I got on a plane to go to Orlando. I show up, literally, like, he's playing his last round. I show up on, like, the fourth hole, and he like, sees me, and then it completely shits the bed the rest of the way.
No.
I mean, man, don't feel bad for Johnson Wagner. He's won a couple tours.
Yeah,
but, like, at that point, literally, I was like the kiss of death.
You
oh,
were.
Man.
So.
Well, you know, you're right. It was kind of this Hollywood-esque story potential. But those guys who made it, I mean, probably 90% of them didn't keep
it. Ill-equipped for it. That's why
right.
they got away with it.
Exactly. So, and then you end up going to the PGA Tour, ill-equipped, not ready. You end up losing money the next year.
Right.
You missed 20 straight cuts or whatever. Now you're in even more of a hole financially and whatever. So that you're right. It was romanticized, but it was a little probably over the top. Well, anyway, this year we did have just an incredible story. One of the stories of the year, Cody Blick, who played his golf at San Jose State. He was a very good college golfer. He will never be known for that. He will never be known maybe for anything else. He will be known for – I mean, he's got a chance now, but he will be known for a long time, at least for the foreseeable future, as the guy who had his club stolen, and then he still shot a 63.
Unbelievable.
Keely, you're – like, we always ask you – you're the closest to a tournament player,
which is
of us three.
So sad.
You still dabble.
It's a low bar.
It's
a low bar.
But, you know, we've heard of stories. There are a lot of guys who have had clubs broken or they've lost their clubs in transit.
Yeah, usually it's travel-related.
Usually
like
travel-related.
You arrive and the shaft of your driver snapped or, you know, some airline lost your clubs. But, like, to have your clubs lifted
gone.
While you're
from your Airbnb.
Like, what? I've never heard of anything like that.
Yeah, when you're about an hour away from going to the course. It's not even like he found out the night before. He found out.
Right.
He said he was making eggs, cooking some breakfast in his rental home. And when it was discovered they were gone, he was leaving for the course in about an hour. So he had to scramble, obviously. And we're going to talk to Cody. He told some good stories about this, what ended up being, you know, an amazing day for him, but it could have been a nightmare. But I mean, back to the, you know, guys losing clubs. I remember last year, there was a guy who, I forgot a US Open qualifier, his clubs got lost. He didn't even play because he didn't have his own clubs.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was a little,
that's
a little extreme, you know, get a rental set, whatever, give yourself a chance. But he said that it was Michael Buttacavelli, I remember. He plays on the Latin
well
America
done.
Tour.
Yeah,
jeez. Yeah. And his thinking was, well, you know, if I show up with rental clubs, it's kind of a slap in the face to the other guys because it's I'm not respecting the event enough almost.
Who thinks like that?
Yeah, like this guy was like, no, I'll take whatever. You know, he got
I'm willing to grind it out.
Irons, he got the wedges from the pro shop. You know, he did have Titleist helping him. They got him, you know, they got him good equipment. It's not like he was rummaging through basements.
But, I mean, literally the superintendent's driver,
yeah.
though. Like, I love that. You
yeah.
know, like, how just gritty these guys are. Just like, this needs to happen right now.
Yeah.
Like, I'm flagging down the superintendent and taking the driver out of his bag.
Well, first of all, I mean, we get into this with Cody, and he has some really good answers about it. But and you know how I love kind of overanalyzing these type of moments.
Yes.
Don't be so quick to agree with that. But what I love is you said, oh, it's a slap in the face to the guys to show up with rental clubs. Okay, so let's assume that not playing with your equipment is costing you, let's just quantify it, 2.5 strokes per round, or a stroke and a half,
yeah.
because you're missing, you don't have your specs or balls you hit. Okay, fine. But now let's take the fact that the pressure of Q School playing for your tour card, or in this guy's case, playing for the U.S. Open, there's all this new elements that you're contending with pressure-wise that are probably adding 2 strokes or 3 strokes to your score because
mm-hmm.
all the pressures. Now, because of what happened to Cody Blick, suddenly doesn't have his clubs, expectations are gone. So the pressure in some ways is off.
Mm-hmm.
And so and as we've seen, I think it played in his favor because he suddenly is like, all right, I might as well just play golf, and suddenly you're going back to instinctive
It's like,
point.
Yeah, it's like when you show up sick and you're just like, oh,
beware of
I don't,
sick golf.
Beware.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
It's just like, okay, I don't have my stuff. No one expecting anything from me. You're in a no-lose situation.
Well, he also was pretty far outside the
right
number.
Yeah.
So he knew he had to kind of go for broke anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so that maybe that helped too. I mean, mentality wise, I mean, you know, it'd be maybe more difficult if you were kind of in and you're trying
totally.
to protect,
trying to protect, you'd be screwed.
Versus,
yes.
Yeah. But Keely, as a, you know, also our equipment guru of us three, how big of a difference do you, you know, Sam mentions a shot and a half, two shots.
Think
how would you quantify it?
I would say it's a lot more than that.
Yeah, wow. maybe.
Yeah. I mean, that's I mean, just think about the putter alone.
Well, he'll get into that. I mean, that was his biggest.
I haven't listened to your interview yet.
He had used that putter for, I think, 7 years or so.
Yeah.
He's actually upset about the putter. That's really the only thing he's that upset about. Because, you know, these guys do switch equipment fairly often, but not putters if you like one. But yeah. So, I mean,
if you're a guy like this, like, you've been fit for your clubs. So how specific you can be with, like, you know, even just the shafts. Like, I'm sure they didn't find
the same shafts of
irons that he played. I mean, that totally messes with you. It's probably different grips too.
Yeah.
Like, that matters. I mean, I don't know if you can actually put like a number on it, but I think it's definitely more than 1.5. I mean, I think it could be like 5.
Yeah, wow. Very well. Like, I mean, you know, but again, I think there's a kind of a opposite effect where you're like, you just go.
Yeah.
You just, you know, right. You're putting, and you know, guys change putters. You hear all these stories about guys switching
yeah.
out a putter
yeah,
with something
Tyrell,
they get in the bottom bobs.
Yep.
Like,
yep.
Tyrell went and bought
from
the putter
from Dick's, night four.
Right?
He shot 63 or whatever.
Yeah.
The next, right.
I think it's a kind of like a good lesson in how I think a lot of amateur golfers are guilty of like falling in love with certain clubs. Like I'm guilty of it. Like I have this 5-wood that's like mm-hmm. 10 years old that Mike doesn't let me play with anymore because it's embarrassing. But it's like your magic club,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
And like, I can't do it without this club.
Right.
It's like, actually you can.
Well, I think obviously if you're a certain level golfer,
you can do it with anything.
To, right.
Yeah.
Especially if now he'll tell us he, Cody really didn't end up getting to practice much, but these guys are also good. If you gave them whatever, if you gave them at least like an hour on the range to figure it out, they could do it better than us. But, you know, obviously you work with Mike Johnson, Mike Satura, we're doing the hot list stuff, and they'll be the first people to say how important
mm-hmm.
equipment is and fitting is and everything else. And I'm
mm-hmm.
not saying it's not at all, because again, this is a one of the top 1%.
I guess that's
in the
world, why maybe your 1.5 strokes makes more sense. I guess like the better you are, the less it matters.
Okay. Of course. Yeah.
So
yeah. Like a lot of the stuff they talk about with equipment and being fit and having a
right.
yeah.
like protecting the bottom tier player, which is like the ball you're snap hooking into the woods is now
mm-hmm.
just a kind of a little bit of a draw. Or
right.
you know, things like that. It's not, you know, you watch guys on the range on the PGA Tour and we all stand behind them, everything looks
perfect,
right? And
they're
noticing
perfect.
That
yeah.
a ball is drawing
right.
you know,
yeah.
2 yards and they want it to draw 3
right.
yards. I mean, that's
yeah.
the level of refinement. And I think
right.
at some point, you know, I don't know, it's easy for me to say that at some point some of that stuff is a wash after a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I guess maybe that's why I felt like 1.5 was so low.
Yeah.
Just because even like – us who are all like decent golfers.
Well, thank you.
I think that would be a huge.
Yeah, it's a bit of a stretch.
I know.
Like a pull-up quote for me. Sam Wyman, decent golfer.
Trying to make more eye contact
podcast.
With Alex on that than you. But no, I think it can make a big difference. Yeah.
Well, and
lost
again,
my train of thought there.
When you get to that level,
yeah,
the margins are so small between these guys that if it really is a shot and a half, that's obviously huge.
A ton.
Over 4 rounds. This was only 1 round, so that probably helped him maybe that it was only
and I'd
want to
see the set that he ended up with too, because
yeah.
could have been pretty decent.
I'm sure it was pretty decent. Anyway, Cody Blick, 63 in the final round, didn't make a bogey, moved all the way up to T25 to get one of those spots. He's going to get at least 8 starts on the web.com tour. He played on the McKenzie Tour, which is the PGA Tour Canada, the last 2 years. He finished 12th and 13th on the money list there. So he's a good player. You need
mm-hmm.
to be top 5 to automatically earn your web status that way. So he's come close. You know, some other great Q School stories. You know, it's such an interesting tournament, obviously, because you have such a wide range of players. I know LPGA, it's the same thing. You have players LPGA who might not even turn pro. They kind of wait and see.
Well, like, especially now that you are allowed to defer your
defer,
status.
Exactly.
So, yeah, you had all these girls who had played Curtis Cup being like, yeah, like pretty noncommittal, like
right,
not sure what
right.
I'm going to do. And it's like, you don't know what you're going to do.
Right. But then, and then you have, you know, you have some of these journeymen, but you also have these young studs. You know, Norman Zhang, we're going to see a ton of. People have compared him to Tiger Woods. He's coming out of Oregon. Doug Gim, a guy out of Texas who was the number one amateur in the world. Those guys finished second and third. They cruised through. You know, those are the guys you expect. Then you have a guy like, I saw the name, Steve LeBrun. He's a name you see pop up. He's 40 years old. He's still grinding out there.
Wow.
I noticed another name, Brian Bigley. I did a post on him last year. I talked to him. He, in a couple weeks off of the Web.com tour schedule, because they don't play every week like the PGA Tour, he went and got his insurance license to be an insurance salesman, because he was like, I never know. This might be it for me. So,
yeah.
You know, I need a backup plan. So you see some of these names, obviously a Cody Blick, who we're not really that familiar with yet, but he's only 25. He's kind of on the way up. So it's just such a wide array of guys. Oh, TJ Vogel, Mr. Monday
qualifier.
Yeah. Broke Patrick Reed's record this past year. He Monday qualified 8 times.
Legend.
Which is, for people who don't know, it's beyond legendary.
It's impossible.
80 guys playing for 3 spots, 2 spots, 4 spots. Over 100 guys
sometimes.
And you
have to shoot like 63 every freaking time.
Exactly.
Like,
and he qualified 8 times. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see him fare pretty well. He's still pretty young. Speaking of the low scores, though, I mean, the whole tournament.
Yeah.
First, put it this way. If you shot 17 under par for 4 rounds, that the course was called Whirlwind, love the name, in Arizona, you did not get anything for shooting 17 under par.
Dang.
Is that, I mean, it obviously shows how amazing they are, but...
Well, that's what they say about the Web.com in general, is the Go Low Tour.
Exactly.
Right?
I was going to say, some people complained about this.
Bombers Tour.
That it didn't test the golfers, but if that's what they're going to be seeing,
but that's what
the
season
doesn't it kind of
that's
set,
not
no
I mean
what
I don't
do
know
think?
I think they should have toughened it up a little bit more. I mean I guess I think that you should, I think that like Q School should be, I guess it should be a representation of what you're going to be experiencing. So I guess if you're gonna have to shoot 20 under, then I guess so.
Well, that's a whole
that's an issue with web though in general, because then you're on the web and you're used to shooting, you know, 20 under, 25 under, whatever, and then you're going to the PGA Tour.
Right.
Yeah. And now all of a sudden you're, like, grinding for 3 under. Yeah. I think that, like, that discrepancy is too large.
I don't know. Low scores?
You know, that's like a philosophical question about what's a better test of golf, right? Is it, you know, better to test guys to make as many birdies as possible, or is something to be said for, you know, shooting 8 under over 4 rounds, and that's, you know, a really valuable test? I would venture toward closer to that, because I feel like the more difficult the golf course, the better players emerge. Whereas, you know, ridiculously low scores or golf courses that are set up for a lot of birdies only reward one specific facet of a game or tend to. But to that point, this is Q School to get on the web.com tour, and the web.com tour, that's kind of the landscape that you're entering into.
I feel like it also just like rewards one style of play too, like going super low. Rewards like one style of play, whereas to go somewhat low, you see like more different types, which I like that better.
Well, one of those guys who finished 17 under didn't get anything was a guy named Patrick Sullivan.
This is awful.
You know, there's always these, we talk about the great stories, the triumphant stories like the Cody Blicks, but there's always the sad stories as well. You know, going back to obviously the infamous Joe Daly, the lip out that hit the bottom of the cup in 2000, popped out. Guy missed his card by 1. But Patrick Sullivan was this year, and he volunteered himself.
Right,
he just put himself out on Twitter. He putted a ball somehow into the water.
Right, we have not seen video.
No, there's no video of it. But he says that he putted a ball into the water on the 14th hole of the back nine. He was comfortably inside, I think, or right around it. Made a double. Then he made a birdie and an eagle and had a 4-foot birdie putt on 18. Missed that. There's video of that.
That's
crushing.
Ugh.
He missed it. I know he had fun with Golf Digest Twitter handle. He when we called him, we referred to him as a journeyman, and he joked that was pretty bad, I guess.
Yeah.
He didn't know which was worse, missing by one or being referred to as a journeyman. But he didn't dispute it. I mean, he's 35. You're
a journeyman.
Kind of a journeyman.
Yeah,
but
it's a trigger word.
I mean,
but
we feel bad for Patrick. He had a rough year on the web last year. I think he missed 20 out of 23 cuts. So, I mean, this, you know, this is no joke. I mean, this is tough. It's such a tough living. But we appreciate kind of his sense of humor, at least, about it. One other guy I want to mention, Met legend.
I know you have to.
Mike Miller, my man from Brewster, New York, who I covered many high school matches of his.
Hey.
And I caught up with him at the U.S. Open. He qualified this year at Shinnecock. He missed the cut. He's been playing on any mini tour that will take him. He's won 10 different times on some, I don't even know what it's called, some Florida thing. Every week I see he shoots 62, 63, mm-hmm. this and that. He's had a couple top 15s on the web. He's only played in maybe like five times. He's only had a couple PGA Tour cracks. He's missed the cut both times. But anyway, he bogey-free 66 the final day, T16, comfortably in. Hey. He'll have eight starts for the first time. He's 26, so he's still in that young age where, you know, all you need is a couple good tournaments, and then you're on the big show the next year. So congratulations to Mike Miller.
I was wondering what that was in reference to on the notes that you sent out to prep for the podcast. Oh, it just says Miller exclamation mark. I was like, I'll just see what this is. Who knows?
I thought
Johnny
mentioned
Arthur Miller.
Like, I was like, Johnny Miller showed up at Q School?
I thought myself and Chris Powers had mentioned him enough the Slack,
it's sort of Slack nauseating.
Channel to
well
to,
we don't sit in the same cube anymore, so I'm not as
that's true
consider yourself
one
lucky.
With your
anyway, we had the pleasure of talking to this star of the week, Cody Blick, after his eventful day week at Q School. So please have a listen to our chat with Cody Blick.
Before we go on, let me talk for a second about Golf Digest Schools. Golf Digest Schools is our new cutting-edge video instruction platform offering more than 250 classes on every part of the game and featuring the leading teachers in golf, from Butch Harmon to David Ledbetter to Michael Breed. Unlike the quick tips you can find across the internet, these are full game improvement programs meant to be followed step by step as if you were working with a pro. It's like Masterclass meets Netflix, but even better because there's the added promise of feedback. To sign up for Golf Digest Schools, go to golfdigest.com/allaccess and use promo code SCHOOLS to get 30% off an annual subscription. Again, golfdigest.com/allaccess and use promo code SCHOOLS.
All right, we're excited to welcome to the Golf Digest podcast for the first time, Cody Blick. Cody, of course, coming off just a crazy day at web.com tour finals, Q School finals, with that 63 with the makeshift set of clubs. Cody, thanks for joining us today. Has it kind of all sunk in yet?
Yeah, guys, thanks for having me. It's starting to settle in a little bit, but it's still pretty surreal, to say the least.
Cody, I mean, the expectations, obviously, you know, when you're a player of your level, everything is so refined. So when you, first of all, realize that you're not going to have your clubs, what are your expectations going into that round?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, initially it was a panic. It was a total disaster, really. But the expectations actually dropped a little bit. I went into it thinking, you know what, if I hit a bad shot, it's not on me. I don't have the right equipment. So it actually took a little pressure off, believe it or not.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. Do you have any further insight into what happened to your clubs or how someone got into your place?
Yeah, so we got home from dinner last night, and I was keeping my clubs in the garage. I guess looking back, that probably wasn't a great idea, but, you know, it was in the garage of the house. I didn't think it was going to be an issue, and the last people in the house, they said they vividly remember shutting the garage door. So somebody got into the garage, and when my coach and his fiance, they woke up early Sunday morning to go for a run, and they noticed the garage door was open and my clubs weren't in there, but they didn't think anything of it. They thought maybe I just brought my clubs into the house. Mm-hmm. So we're making breakfast, and that's kind of where the panic set in for me.
Yeah, you said you were making some eggs and that you wound up not eating the eggs because you were obviously thrown for a loop there. How quickly did you get that Instagram up that did wind up going viral, kind of that reward that you offered.
Yeah, it was a great morning, to tell you the truth. It was, you know, all seven of us were in the kitchen having a great time making breakfast with eggs and bacon and fruit and the whole nine yards going. And that's when Julie, my coach's fiance, came in and said, "Cody, your clubs are in the garage. Do you have them?" And that was, you know, I ran into the garage and they weren't there. And so yeah, instant panic hit. It was probably 10 minutes of panic. And then after that, I got that Instagram photo up. My college roommate, who's an Instagram putting coach now, he's the one who initially posted something. He has whatever 50,000 followers. So he got it up pretty quick, but it was pretty scary.
What actually is the toughest thing to replace in your bag? I mean, I don't even know if it was an actual club or something in a pocket. But when you're kind of having that panic moment at the time, what are you thinking of first?
Well, it's pretty funny. Like, throughout the day, I things kind of kept popping into my mind. So initially it was the putter. The putter I've had since 2011. You know, it's the only putter I've used since. So all my wins, my collegiate wins, everything was with that putter. So that was like, I mean, that one stings, to tell you the truth. Mm-hmm. But I went through the day. You know, other clubs, they can be replaced. That's fine. But the putter, you know, it's you have that connection with the putter, as weird as that sounds. So throughout the day, I kind of just realized that I lost other things. Like, getting ready for the round, I went to look for my ball marker, and my lucky ball marker was gone. Oh. And it was my towel. I didn't have my towel, right? So things just kind of kept popping up. But the putter was definitely the hardest to get.
How much practice did you end up getting? I know you said you started warming up with the couple clubs that you did have that you weren't going to use, but how much did you get with the new set of clubs, and how much practice on the putting green did you get with that new putter?
Yeah, so I started warming up with those couple wedges, and then I had my backup 2 and 3 iron, which, I mean, that's not much. So I was hitting wedges, and I hit about 5 tee shots with the driver and about 3 woods.
Wow.
And I didn't have anything else at the time, right? The irons hadn't shown up. And so I took the putter and just went to the putting green. I probably spent a good 30 minutes on the putting green just trying to get the feel down. I didn't get to hit any balls with the irons, which was pretty tough, to tell you the truth, because they were heavy and they were upright. So it was pretty hard for me to not miss it left.
So, yeah, talk me through, I read a little bit about sort of how the set was constructed. So take me through kind of all the elements that eventually resulted in the bag that you played.
Yeah, so I called Titleist right after my panic attack kind of went down, and they were on it immediately. They had five, six guys just working nonstop for 90 minutes.
Wow.
So I show up to the pro shop, and Titleist hadn't gotten there yet. They were still trying to figure out what they had in their lockers and whatnot. So the guys in the pro shop gave me a couple wedges. So that was the first thing I had, a 58 and a 50 degree from the rental set in the pro shop. And then so my old college roommate then actually had my 54 degree from 2 years ago. So that was my one club that I was somewhat familiar with. Mm-hmm. So I then had a 58, my 54, and a rental 50 degree. I brought those to the range. And then the driver showed up. I hit 3 balls, and they were all going right. And they did a tweak, hit 2 more, and it was pretty good. So we left that. And then the 3-wood, I hit 3 shots, and they were pretty solid. So that was that. And then the putter showed up, and they had 2 options. You know, it was a little longer and quite a bit heavier than what I was playing before, but I just kind of went with it. And then we're on the putting green, and the irons show up, and then now at this point, it's go time.
Were your playing partners aware of what was going on?
Oh, it was, no, not really. So okay. we shake hands on the first tee, well, the 10th tee, we saw it on the back nine. We shake hands, and talking through it, and they overheard my coach say something, because my coach was caddying for me, and so they were kind of in shock, like, what are you talking about? And so, yeah, I told them the whole story, and now they're both just, like, looking at the bag, going through it, trying to see what I'm gaming with for the day. It was pretty funny.
I mean, you shot 63, so obviously it sounds like you didn't hit many bad shots, but was there a specific shot that you stood over the ball and you felt like it was guesswork? Were you, you know, just based on you didn't know how the club would react to the shot you wanted to hit?
Yeah, so the second hole of the day, so the irons I got were the superintendent's irons, actually, and it was a 9-8-7-6 iron. And then we had to find, like, a demo 5-iron. So the second hole of the day, I have 205 yards to that right pin, and, I mean, that's a perfect 5-iron. But this 5-iron is an S300 shaft. It's like a high-launching shaft, and it was lightweight. And, you know, the other irons, at least they were close. They were Project X 6.5s, and I play 6.0. So, you know, there was some familiarity there. But with the 5-iron, it was like this thing was – it was a feather. So second shot of the day, here we go. I'm 205 yards down. I'm just guessing with this 5-iron. And somehow I hit it to, like, 18 feet pin high left. And, I mean, it was just that actually was a little comforting because I just kind of went with it, and it panned out.
And I read that you only missed one fairway with the driver, and you even hit it off the deck at some point. So you were feeling pretty good with it. And then also that the putter, you didn't miss anything within 7 feet or something like that. What, you know, take me through your stats with those. I mean, those are obviously probably the two most important clubs, especially at a course where, you know, you have to go low. What were your stats like with those two clubs?
Yeah, totally. So the driver, I missed the second fairway of the day, and that was it with the driver.
Wow.
I missed a fairway later with the 3-wood, but so the driver was 12 for 13. and yeah, I hit two off the deck. I hit on the 17th hole, which was our 8th hole, I smoked a little high fade right over the flag, and unfortunately went long, and I didn't get up and down. But that was a sweet shot. And then on, what was that? That was 7, so our 16th hole, same thing, left myself a pretty easy up and down, and was able to convert that one. But the driver was great. I actually took a picture of it, and because I wanted to remember the settings, because it was honestly better than my driver. So that was a point in the win column there. And the putter, you know, it's funny. My coach and I talk about this all the time. My blueprint, I guess you will, of my golf game is, I hit it pretty straight, and I give myself a lot of looks, and I make a lot of putts, right? It's the putter that takes me to the next level, not the ball striking necessarily. And so, yeah, we had 9 birdies, and the first 7, they were all within 5 feet. So the putter was good in the sense that, you know, I was making those 3, 4, 5 footers, but somehow the ball striking just took over.
Huh. On the spectrum of professional golfers, you know, being super technical and super into their equipment, before this experience, where would you have put yourself? Like, if there's the guy who doesn't really care and is sort of indifferent, and the guy who's super in touch with everything in his bag, where would you fall?
Yeah, wow, I never thought about that. You know, on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being I really care, I was probably like a 3 or a 4. I mean, my putter was stock, off the shelf, 34-inch, you know, standard loft and lie. You know, I guess I just kind of make it work. And, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I fool around with my brother's clubs all the time. He's Callaway, and they're half-inch long and different shafts. So I guess in a sense, I didn't really care before, but, you know, I guess I would never want to do that final round of Q school.
Yeah. Do you think that helped you maybe, that you weren't such a stickler equipment-wise, and maybe someone else it would have affected more?
Yeah, I think so, because, I was able to get over it pretty quick. You know, we were building the set, and it wasn't necessarily like, can we do this or that? It's, you know, I'll take whatever you guys have, just let me hit the golf ball kind of mentality, and yeah, I think it was pretty easy to get over. I mean, I didn't really have a choice, right? So
right.
It was It was, this is what you got, now go put the ball in the hole.
What year was this for you? Had you been in the finals the last couple years also, or was this your first final, or what?
Yeah, no, this was my first time at final stage.
Okay, and you got in. I know you were 12th on the McKenzie Tour money list. Mm-hmm. Is that what got you into the final, or did you still have to do another round?
Yeah, so 12th, so the 11th through 25th on the order of merit get to second stage. So
okay.
I had to go to second stage at Bear Creek.
Okay, so you made it through.
And then,
gotcha.
Exactly.
When you're playing in that final round, how much information do you have of where you stand versus the field? Obviously, you knew going in where you stood and that you needed a low round. I think you were pretty far outside that top 40. But as you came down the stretch, obviously you birdied the final three holes. You know, where did you know where you stood?
Yeah, so I looked at the leaderboard the night before, and T37, I think it was at 14 under. So that means, you know, they're averaging just over 4.5 under par a day.
Sure.
So that puts the line at like 18.5 under par.
Mm-hmm.
And we were at the tournament course, and, you know, there's some Sunday pressure. So I thought 18
sure.
was going to be the number. So that was my goal. So I had to shoot 8 because I was 10 under starting the day.
Right.
But at the start of the week, my goal was to get to 20. So
okay.
I thought 5 under every day would be no problem. So that was kind of my goal for the day, was to get to 20, right? So instead of thinking, okay, geez, I'm 3 under and I've only played 5 holes, this could be a good round, I was thinking, okay, I've got 3 down, I need 7 more. So that was kind of how I was looking at it.
Did you think you needed to birdie the last hole, or did you know when did you know you were kind of on that number? Because you're right, that 18 under number ended up being the number, and you beat it by one. But did you know on your 17th, 18th hole that you needed a birdie, needed a par? How about that situation?
Yeah. So we were 6 under with 3 holes to play, and I was kind of bummed that 20 was out of the question. So I looked at Gary, my coach, and I just said, let's birdie the last 3, right? Like, let's just birdie in. 19 still on the table. And, you know, we hit that driver off the deck on 7, our 16th hole, and got up and down for birdie, and that was all good. And then 8, we tucked the tee shot, able to hit on the green to 15, 18 feet. And I made that putt, and I didn't really know at that time,
mm-hmm.
but my family and my coach's fiance and my buddy, they all kind of like went nuts for a second. Like, they got really excited
uh-huh.
and then realized that, like, they don't want to give anything away, you know?
Okay.
So I knew that was pretty important at that point. And then I thought the shot of the day was the tee shot of the last hole. It's this little narrow dogleg left, and I made double on that hole last time I played it. I smoked it into the desert, and so, you know, I have all these, like, thoughts going on, and I was able to focus up and smoke it down the middle and hit a wedge in there to, like, 18 feet. And then at that point, Gary, my coach, looked at me and said, Coach, you only need 2 putts. And I said, well, you know, Gary, like, let's just make this, get as close to 20 as we can. And somehow it went in, so.
That's great.
I'm curious, you know, if you subscribe to that belief that because kind of – this whole scramble maybe left you with lower expectations and maybe strangely benefited you. Have you ever had a round like that in your life in any other way where, because of whatever circumstances, you didn't have the same level of expectations and it sort of worked out in your favor?
Oh, man. Not off the top of my head. And I can tell you it definitely wasn't to this degree of intensity. Definitely not.
I'm sure. So what's next for you, Cody? Like, what? Give me the, obviously, I mean, you have status, most importantly, but take us through the next few weeks and months.
Yeah, my plan originally was I was going to take the 17th through Christmas off. So that would have been a nice 7-8 days and put the clubs away and hang out with family. But my plan was to practice this week, and obviously I don't have any clubs, so that's kind of off the table. So I don't know, to tell you the truth. I'll probably just enjoy the holidays with my family and then get right back on it, get ready for the Bahamas.
Yeah, and obviously you have the eight starts. Maybe explain to people a little what that means. You have the eight starts before the first reshuffle, I think. Is how does it work?
Yeah, so you know, I'm not totally sure. This is my rookie season out there. I'm pretty sure every reshuffle is every four events is a reshuffle.
Okay.
And so we got the first eight, which is pretty huge, because I think there's only 27 events on the 2019 schedule. So we got, you know, a decent amount of them covered, and after the eighth, there's another reshuffle. So we have eight chances at making enough money to continue to reshuffle in, and that, I mean, hopefully, fingers crossed, that should be enough. So it's pretty nice to have some guaranteed starts and at least know what the first few months of the season are going to look like, and to have that guaranteed is really nice.
How, you know, just back to the finals itself, we always hear about Q School, how much pressure there is. You know, you seem to be really calm, especially given all the circumstances. But how does the pressure of that event compare to a normal event during the year? Obviously, you know, you might be playing for a bigger purse even or whatever, but this with a job on the line, it seems like, you know, it would present the most pressure.
Yeah, and, you know, I think a lot of guys do look at it that way, but for me, it's just another tournament. I mean, it's another 4 days of golf and go give it your all. I mean, we've all been playing tournaments for 10, 15, 20 years now. So, you know, I don't think it's really necessary to put that much added pressure on yourself. So I just go out there and just look at it like it's 4 days of golf.
I think people are also really surprised by just how low the scores were. Why, like, no one finished over par for the week. You know, like you said, 18 under you needed. If you shot 17 under, you didn't make it the top 40. What I mean, that's just crazy. Like, how do you explain the low scoring?
You know, I really can't. I can't explain it. It's just a good field on a course that if you're hitting it well is fairly gettable. But, you know, that desert sneaks in pretty quick. So the foul balls are definitely heavily penalized.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I had a hard time reading the greens. I felt like I hit a lot of good putts that simply just did not come close to going in. So that was my biggest challenge of the week was those bonus putts. Those 15, 20, 25-footers just weren't going in like they normally do. But, I mean, it's just a really good field, and it's guys fighting for their livelihood, I guess, at the end of the day. So it's not like they're lackadaisical by any chance.
I think you kind of already answered this question, but you gave back the clubs now for the most part that you played with?
I did, yeah. So the driver and three wood went back to Titleist. The two wedges went back to the pro shop, and the short irons went to the superintendent, and the long irons went to the head pro. So and the only thing I kept was the putter. It's just like a little token of the day.
Well, that's great. Well, congratulations, Cody. Good luck. Maybe, I mean, hopefully you get that. Someone changes their mind about what they did. Sends you at least that putter. I know you want to get that back. But thanks for joining us. Congratulations. That was really some kind of story that you put forth. And good luck next year on the web.com tour.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
You got it, man. Take care.
Take care, Cody.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks again to Cody Blick for taking us through that wild day. Sam, any last thoughts on the whole situation?
What's interesting is that when we asked him about, you know, where he falls on the spectrum of being a super analytical about his equipment, he said he's on the light end. So I think that also speaks to it. Like, if he was one of those guys who was really into his specs and really, you know, dependent upon everything being right, he might not be a candidate for what he did. But the fact that he's – I mean, I guess all tour players are finicky to some extent, but relatively speaking, he's not as much. And so I think that spoke to why he was able to kind of take advantage of the moment.
Right. Like, had it been Bryson DeChambeau.
Right.
Oh, my God.
Exactly. Right. He would have been done. Okay, let's move on to – you know, I wanted to discuss – maybe some of our – we have Christmas coming up. We have Hanukkah in the rearview mirror. our holiday wish list, things we want to see happen in golf, maybe personally, maybe on a professional level.
Oh, I didn't know that's where you were going with it. Well, any, things we want to see.
Things we want to see happen. Fine,
I'm really struggling with what you're going to come up with.
Well, okay, I'll go first. Right. I want Tiger Woods to win the Masters.
Oh, my God, what?
I would give up Christmas gifts for the rest of my life to have that happen. Honestly.
For your kids, too, or just for you?
Oh, no.
Don't do that to Julia.
Not to Julia. All right. No, she still gets gifts, but my wife and I, it's done.
Does your wife know about this?
No, she doesn't know about this.
She listen to the podcast?
No, she doesn't listen to the podcast. No way. I'd love to see Tiger win the Masters. I'd love to see him win any major, of course, but I think the Masters has, even though I know you, I personally like the U.S. Open better than the Masters, I think it's still, it's not a bigger deal anymore. You can't really argue it. The Masters has clearly become the preeminent event, and, you know, as big of a deal as it was, the Tiger winning the Tour Championship, man, I cannot imagine what it would be like, the hysteria, if you won the Masters. I think it would be amazing.
Playoff? Runaway win? What would you prefer? While you're asking for everything.
I can't take it. I need it to be a runaway win. I wouldn't be able to. If you went
My
to
heart
a
can't
playoff
take it.
At the Masters, still sudden death.
Yes, sudden
still
death.
Still sudden death. The only one, I couldn't take it. No way. I couldn't take it when Sergio and Justin Rose came to 18 tied.
Right.
A couple years ago. I mean, or last year. Whew. I mean, that was intense. And then, of course, the playoff as well. So, no, I hope it's just a runaway win, Tiger. Just you know, stomp on these guys' necks and make it take it home. That's at least professionally what I'd like to see happen. Sam, a lot of directions here.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I would say, can I talk about my own game?
Yeah, of course.
Well, we had that whole thing about single-digit handicap versus breaking 80.
Oh,
what would you
go.
Prefer?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
I've never done either. Right.
So
that's it. No, I'm not, you know.
Yeah,
just
one of the two, I think, would be, and I think they're very much within reach. Don't roll your eyes, Keely. I saw that.
Well, you have to be a single-digit handicapper, you have to have broken 80.
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
So, well, actually, yeah. You're right.
So that would be the one that comes
first. Well, I guess
first,
you could
probably
consistently shoot 81 and you'd be a single-digit handicapper.
You played at a very tough course.
That's ridiculous. Yeah. So, yeah. So, right. So, I guess, yeah, that would be my
break
thing.
80.
Break 80.
I like that.
But you know what? Because I'm not a results-oriented guy, that's not the biggest thing in my – I just want to have another great golf year. I had a great golf year in 2018 from a personal just enjoyment standpoint, so that's all I want.
But you
want I know.
What's your low score?
83.
Okay. I mean, easily could happen.
It's right there.
Keep playing par 70s.
Nah.
Go to Dunwoody. You ever play Dunwoody?
A lot of executive courses.
Dunwoody and Yonkers, it has about 7 par 3s. It's maybe 5,600 yards.
Have
that's
you played?
That's where I broke 100 and 80, I think, for the first time.
Really?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So just bunting
Dunwoody,
around
free
there.
Advertising.
Free advertising. Free advertising. Great hot dogs.
Right. A lot of Met golf discussion in this podcast.
This is
Johnson
getting
Wagner,
very,
Mike Miller, Dunwoody.
Should get Chris Powers,
Powers
to call in.
Powers will be able to handle it.
All right, Keels, what do you got?
I would like to see, I guess there hasn't been an American woman in the number one spot in the world rankings, since Stacy in 2014. So, I mean, if it went like half a decade without a woman being a number one, I mean, that would be kind of a long time. So I think it'd be cool to, I mean, Lexi's not that far off.
Sure.
So I think it's doable, attainable goals.
Who, if it's not Lexi, who could it be?
I mean, it could be a lot of people.
Okay.
A lot of Americans won last year. I mean, like, both Cordas won last year. Michelle Wee won last year. She's currently recovering from surgery, so that's not a great bet right now.
Yeah.
Marina Alex won last year. That would be a pretty big jump to get to number one, though. But I think between the Cordas and Lexi, it's looking pretty good.
Yeah. Obviously, I feel
Danielle Kang too.
Danielle Kang, yes,
your girl,
friend of GD. Yeah.
Yes,
we love Danielle Kang. She's you never know, she can get hot.
Oh my God, yeah, she's
very talented
player.
I forgot to mention, of course, my ultimate wish is to make a hole in one.
Every year, forever.
But that
there
goes,
you go.
That goes
trade the two too. Right there. You have a choice between making a hole in one or targeting one of the Masters.
Oh come
on,
man. How selfish are you?
Tiger winning. Tiger! I got to go Tiger.
Well, hole in one is kind of fleeting. First of all, it's flukish, and it's fleeting.
It's flukish.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, no, definitely Tiger.
The the results because of Tiger winning the Masters would last forever. You having a hole-in-one, we'd be happy for like a day.
Right.
Right.
And then, you know, I'd still have a chance to make. Or am I saying I can't ever make a hole-in-one?
For his life?
I mean, I don't know how binding any of these contracts
I still would go with Tiger. I'm not going to be selfish here. Everybody wants to see Tiger win. Not everybody. We know a couple people don't. But, you know, most people want Tiger to win.
What, I thought you were going to ask, like, gifts we want. Like, literally.
Oh, well, what do you want?
That's what I thought, too. Yeah. So
Your notes were not good.
I wrote them on the train. I'm sorry. It was on my computer was dead.
Right.
Okay. What holiday golf gifts do you want? See, I didn't think of that way because since we just moved offices, we got a lot of like free stuff. So I told my wife, do not get me anything right. golf because right. it's yeah. pointless. I have everything.
Would she? Has she bought you golf stuff?
She has in the past. It's dumb. She did though buy me a Tiger red Nike shirt a few years ago, which is still like my top number one golf shirt that I, you know.
Hilarious.
But other than that, I say just don't. Don't even bother.
I don't ever ask for golf stuff.
I get too
stuff.
Much yeah. stuff randomly. So okay, well what did you have in mind then?
I don't know. I'm due to get fit. So that's so boring. And then like we did
that
thing.
That's a great gift.
I know. But then I can't believe
you've never gotten fit. I mean, hold on.
I have been fit, but I haven't activated the fit.
Gotcha.
So that's the thing is it's not just getting fit, it's then getting fit and then
buying clubs.
Buying all the clubs. Yeah. I think I'm due. I mean, you know, because the two go hand in hand. If I do that, there's no doubt I'm going to be breaking 80 pretty soon.
Yeah.
True.
Cuz I'm such a pure ball striker.
It's a three shot amazing right, that I right. at least a four shot swing right. around.
So that and then that's the biggest one, obviously. I think I'm due. Although I make do with what I have.
Well, do you have a big – is this a year of your big golf trip or no?
TBD.
TBD.
Probably not.
That doesn't sound that
– doesn't sound great.
I'm happy about that.
Yeah.
What do you want – do you need anything golf-wise?
I don't need anything. I kind of want to – I've been, like, slowly upgrading my head covers because I'm kind of – I don't know. I think it's like a fun part of the bag that Sam is just scowling at now.
Yeah, that's not a real answer, is it?
It is a real answer. I need a driver head cover and a hybrid head cover to complete the full set here. So.
Head covers is not.
Yeah, it's hard
there
for me to get
There are some great
my
head
dad
covers
too,
out
like
there.
That just shows you have everything. When
yeah,
you're,
when
you're
like
about head
really
covers.
Homing yeah. in on right. head yeah. covers. Yeah.
Yeah, that's.
Whatever. You guys suck.
Yeah. All right.
Pom-poms or no pom-poms?
No pom-poms.
Okay, I don't know. You never
Jeez.
Know.
Yeah, you never know.
My dad has pom-pom head covers, which really? Is like, I mean, he's an 85-year-old man. It's, so
I'm a 28-year-old woman. I don't have pom-poms
yeah,
on my
don't need
clubs.
It. Okay, some awards here. Best one-day story, and that goes to the plane that landed on a New Jersey court. Met.
Yes.
Sam, rebranding the Golf Digest podcast is the Met area.
The Met Golf podcast.
Sam, I know you had this... covered this with the Post yesterday. What you know, there was a funny. We can laugh about it now because there were no serious injuries. A funny twist to this story.
Well, yeah, because the plane landed on the ninth hole
on a Sunday morning.
On a Sunday morning, but again, it was like 30 degrees on Sunday. So
but us Met golfers are hard.
I know,
not
especially
me.
Jersey, North Jersey. So, but there was a frost delay, and they all went off until noon. The plane landed, I believe, at 12:50, and it landed on the ninth hole. So figure. If everyone went off at noon, no one's getting to the ninth hole by then.
No.
So mm-hmm. there was no one near it. Because if it was, you know, if there was no frost delay, people went off at 10:30, we got problems.
Yeah.
So fortunately, everyone was okay. Amazingly, they kept the course open after the plane had landed, but they just
Great.
Closed, like, those you know, seven holes around
yeah.
it. So
frost delay.
Frost
getting
delay.
It done.
Yeah.
Incredible.
See, Alex, the cold is good.
The cold is good.
It saves lives.
You shouldn't. First of all, you shouldn't be playing when there's a frost. It's, I mean, that's. I don't know, but people do it. I mean, I get it. I know you're from Vermont, Keeley, so you do it a lot. But no, not for me. Okay, this week in pros are just like us. Jack Nicklaus. Now this was odd because he, you know, we know his grandson Nick O'Leary plays for the Miami Dolphins. He posts pictures with him every once in a while. This week he posted photos about the Dolphins. You know, the miracle in Miami, the big win against the Patriots, which I think everybody was excited for outside of New England. But he slipped in the fact that he left the game early. And he put a picture of him, like, looking at it on the phone.
Right.
Like, that was supposed to give him
right.
some sort of street cred.
Yeah.
Like, if you left a game early, wouldn't you just hush up about?
Yeah, yeah.
Didn't
yeah.
you leave a game early?
No, 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 no. Oh, right. No, no. Okay. I was okay. at that game where a bunch of Golf Digest people went to the Giants game.
Yes.
With a perfect game.
Yes. Matt Cain threw.
Matt Cain threw a perfect game, which I was there for.
The U.S. Open 2011.
Right. 2012. Olympic Club.
Olympic Club.
And Dustin Johnson was one row. Okay. I think he left early too, but don't quote me on that.
Ooh,
and a bunch spot. Of Golf Digest people left early.
They did.
Right.
Mike Johnson, Ashley Mill. no, not to name names. Okay, you stayed,
I
which
stayed.
I'm amazed because you cut out of things early.
I know, but I saw.
Wow,
I sensed
shots
history.
Fired.
You sensed
oh, yeah.
history.
Holiday party last night.
Yeah, yeah. Cut
the
out
old
early.
No show.
Yep.
Brutal.
Yeah.
You didn't go either.
I was working.
He was doing work. I gave
yeah.
him.
You're working.
I was talking
oh, yeah.
with Jim Nance, my boy. I mean,
oh my God.
He's my boy. He asked about you.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
So where's Sam?
Wow. Not at the holiday party.
He's making sure because he issued a restraining order, so he wanted to make sure.
Anyway, Jack left the game early. Miami fans do have a reputation for doing this, though. They did this in the 2013 NBA Finals when the Heat made that incredible comeback. People were trying to get back in for the overtime, and they weren't allowed to get back in. So maybe it's a culture thing down there. But again, just say how excited you are about it. Don't say you left early.
Yeah.
And also, you know, I mean, I just thought it was funny, though, that, you know, 18-time major champ is thinking about beating traffic. Like, you know, I mean, I'm sure he's being driven around. I mean,
yeah, that's really
anyway,
funny.
Jack. Okay, stat of the week, Tiger Woods. He will finish this year at number 13 in the official world golf ranking. He, of all the people in the top 50, he made by far the biggest jump, obviously. He jumped up 643 spots. And if you go back a month before to the Hero, when he was ranked 1,199th, that means he jumped 1,186 spots in 1 year. That's pretty good.
That's not bad.
That's not bad.
Is you know, I again, we talk about Tiger all the time, but this really might have been one of his most impressive years.
Yeah, that's a whole other discussion, but you can make the argument it would be. I mean, you know, getting granted with where the baseline was,
mm-hmm.
where we were a year ago. So a year ago, he was done with Hero, and he played okay at the Hero. What did he finish, ninth?
Yeah.
Ninth out of 18.
Right in the middle.
Right?
Yep.
So, he, you know, there was signs that he was
right.
good. But then again, it's like, you know, 18-man field. It's not
right.
that big a deal. So you still, at no point at this point last year, were you saying he's going to win a tournament. It
right.
still seemed very
mm-hmm.
far-fetched.
Right.
So you were hoping he was going to
get
through
the first. Well, because the year before, he played pretty well at the Hero,
and then he
played,
had,
like,
yeah.
one tournament
yeah.
and was done. What, yeah. Keely, if you – he's number 13 now. When we talk about this next year, where will he be ranked?
I think that I've proven that I am not the right person to predict Tiger's future. I mean, I thought that there was no chance that he would ever win anything ever again. And now, I mean, I've clearly been proven wrong. And the way that he's been playing, I mean, he could win like the British. I think I would love the
Masters
too. I know he could win the Masters. Yeah. I think the British is more likely, though.
Okay.
I mean, I guess he could easily be within the top 10 next year.
By the way, if he wins the British, do you still give out Christmas gifts or just the Masters?
Just the Masters.
Birthday
gifts.
I would give him up for any major. yeah, at this point, I really would.
Even PGA?
Yeah, it's a major. This is major, guys. This is major. I
players?
No, not the
not players.
Oh, sorry, players. Unless they count it as a major someday, which who knows? They might switch things up. No, I want him to. At this point, I'd be happy with him winning one more major. That's why, as cool as it was this year when he came so close at the last two, it's still the next day it was like, is that ever going to happen
yeah.
again? Because he had a chance. But, you know, I think he's got a chance. I was mad that, I mean, I really didn't think Sports Illustrated was going to give him Sports Person of the Year for
right.
a third time. He's the only person to ever win it twice. But they gave it to a team.
I know. It's the
Warriors.
Or, like,
it's
kind of
lame. I mean,
yeah, highly lame.
I mean, if you'd given it to the Warriors pre-Kevin Durant signing when they won the 73 games or whatever, well, I guess they lost the championship that year. But anyway, a team just seems kind of lame.
I don't like that either.
Yeah. And I mean, Tiger did, you know, it's one of the great comebacks in sports. And it's
if not
is for
the
Sports Person of the Year. Who is like a bigger deal? I know we live in our little golf bubble world, but Tiger's still.
I think Tiger proves
he's
that
a big
he's
deal.
Outside of the golf bubble.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
That's not.
Yeah.
I'm upset too.
Maybe next year, Tiger, for Christmas, you get Sportsman of the Year after you win the Masters.
Do you think he cares?
And No, he probably doesn't care. I think he cares about winning the Masters.
Oh, yeah.
That's for sure. All right, guys. That was very fun. Thanks again to Cody Blick for joining us. Thanks for listening. Please subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts if you haven't done so already. And check back
soon.
We'll see what's going on over the holiday season.